Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Monday, August 5th. I'm Ray Graff. Support for Medical Monday comes from Woodland Pond at New Paltz, a life plan community at the foot of the Schwangunks, near education, the arts, and outdoor activities. Future residency waitlist available, woodlandpondnp.org. Joining us this afternoon is Dr. Ishna Sharma, a general surgeon specializing in bariatric and minimally invasive surgery at St. Peter's Health Partners Bariatric and Metabolic Care. She's an expert in the use of advanced robotics in metabolic and bariatric surgery. If you have a question for Dr. Sharma, give us a call. 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. We'll kick it off right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Medical Monday, and in the studio this afternoon is Dr. Ishna Sharma, a board-certified general surgeon specializing in bariatric and minimally invasive surgery at St. Peter's Health Partners Bariatric and Metabolic Care. She is one of only 15 surgeons in the U.S. to have completed the American Society for Metabolic and Bariatric Surgery Advanced Robotics Training Fellowship, which she completed at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. She's also the creator and host of the Mayo Clinic Talks podcast, Obesity Edition Series, which explores the multidisciplinary current-day management of obesity, and we'll talk about that today. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. If you have a question for Dr. Sharma, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Ishna Sharma, welcome to the show.
Hi, Ray. Thanks for having me.
So I can't believe you made it here. You're on call today, huh?
Oh, wow. Man. Yep. I might have to leave anytime I get a call.
Okay. Well, if you have to leave, this show is really going to be in trouble. I got to be honest with you. Okay. I ask this often of doctors who are obviously among the most brilliant people who ever walk in these studios. And what made you want to focus on this specific area of medicine?
Sure. I mean, there's lots of different specialties these days. And I think a lot of what doctors end up specializing in, it has to do with who they trained with and who they kind of encountered and the mentorship they got along the way.
Yeah.
So I kind of knew from an early age, I really thought I wanted to be a surgeon. And then as I kind of explored different types of surgery, especially in my general surgery training, I was really attracted to bariatric surgery because of the patients and because of the patient experience they have. It's a very unique specialty where patients come in very excited, optimistic, and motivated to change their life. This is, you know, no one becomes obese or suffers from obesity overnight. This is something they've been usually suffering from years or even a lifetime. And they come in and they're ready to make a change and improve their health. And so you really end up getting to know them at a different level as a bariatric surgeon, going with them on this journey, and then getting them to a new health and a new life that they've been really working for.
What's the most common surgery that you do on the bariatric front? We'll talk metabolic in a little bit, but what's the most common surgery you do day to day?
Bariatric surgery, the most common bariatric surgery in the U.S. is the sleeve gastrectomy currently.
Yeah.
So my practice is about half and half. It's about half sleeve gastrectomies and half gastric bypasses.
Okay.
We also do single anastomosis duodenoileostomies, you can think about it in a more extreme version of a bypass.
Yeah.
I do offer that, but that's for very specific patients that have very specific health needs.
Well, let's talk about that. Let's talk about that usual patient who comes in. One of the things that it's always interesting to me to talk to a bariatric surgeon about is the constant inundation of new medicines and the constant, it's not a battle, but the choice between surgery and medication. But what is the usual kind of patient who comes in?
Yeah, and you bring up a great point. You know, I'm also board certified in obesity medicine, and that's a relatively new field. And like you said, it's not a battle, but it's a different tool.
Yeah.
Obesity is a very complex disease, and it often requires a lot of different tools. So surgery is one tool, medications is one tool, diet, exercise, counseling is another tool, endoscopy these days is another tool. So it all kind of fits together with what the patient needs.
Let's talk about words for a minute. Now, you know, I'm not speaking out of school here, but I fought the Battle of the Bulge since I was four, okay? Is obesity really a disease?
Obesity is absolutely a disease, and it's a chronic state of inflammation. It's not just about how we're looking, or even not just about how we're feeling. We know at a cellular level, it's putting our body into an inflamed state where it affects almost every part of our body. And we see that with our patients who come in. Patients are suffering not just from the actual obesity and how they're feeling and looking, but also the gout that comes with it, diabetes, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, joint pains that are preventing them from being healthy. So it's a full inflammatory state, and it's a chronic condition.
We're joined today by Dr. Ishna Sharma from St. Peter's Health Partners Bariatric and Metabolic Care. If you have a question for Dr. Sharma, get in now while you can. 800-348-255. I did a couple shows today, so I'm already shot. 800, but you're doing fine. 800-348-2551 is our number if you have a question for Dr. Ishna Sharma today. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. All right, before we take our break, we got a few minutes here. Let's talk about that. On one side, it seems like every day there's a new commercial with someone dancing around, and there's weight loss medicine. And then you also do this very, you know, it's very common now, these different bypasses. You said gastric sleeve is the most popular one that you do. Mm-hmm. But there, tell us how you, the doctor, differentiate the patient who you say, okay, let's try medication with this before we cut.
Right. No, and that is such a good question. So especially at St. Peter's Bariatric Center, we have both options under the same roof. So we have excellent medical weight loss physicians that we work with. And then we have myself and my partner, bariatric surgeons. And then I also have the additional board certification in obesity medicine. So we're all kind of there to meet each patient where they're at. The way it usually works is we'll have a patient come in. We have an informational seminar with them that's free. They kind of learn about obesity as a disease. And then we meet with patients individually, and we discuss a lot of things, like what they're bringing to the table in terms of their own medical conditions, medical history, what their individual goals are for their weight loss and for their health, and then we go from there and make a decision. And sometimes it's not either or. Sometimes patients will start with medication, see how that goes, then come over to surgery. Sometimes we have patients who have had surgery in the past and they're looking for other options. So it's a huge field, and that's why it's a specialty. But thankfully, we have all those options available at our center.
Let me ask you a question, not necessarily related to your specific field, but every time I'm on TV, I see, ask your doctor about this. Ask your doctor about that. A, how many people actually come in and say, oh, I saw this, can I get this? And B, does it annoy you?
Oh my gosh, nothing annoys me.
No, not
our patients. It takes also very, I mean, going on a little side note, but patients who have been suffering from obesity are often patients who don't seek health care. They feel there's a lot of kind of mental barriers for patients who are suffering from obesity to even seek care. So we are always so happy that a patient has even taken that step and come in to make this huge change for their life. So nothing annoys me from that perspective. In terms of, yeah, definitely we get questions these days. There's a lot of confusion these days because there's so many different medications.
Yeah.
There's so many different kinds of surgery. And so oftentimes patients come in saying, hey, I know my obesity is a problem and I need help with this. Can you help me figure out what's going to work for me and what's the right plan?
We're joined today by Dr. Ishna Sharma, board-certified general surgeon specializing in bariatric and minimally invasive surgery at St. Peter's Health Partners Bariatric and Metabolic Care. The number here, if you have a question, is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551, or you can email us, voxpop@wamc.org. The sleeve gastrectomy is the most popular?
It's the most commonly done in the U.S. In my practice, it's about half or half, sleeve and then gastric bypass. But if you look at bariatric surgery in the U.S., that's the most common.
Explain to me the difference. And we only have 2 minutes before the break, so let's make it quick.
The difference, a sleeve gastrectomy, they're just different surgeries. Basically, the sleeve gastrectomy, a big picture view is you take out part of the stomach and remove it out of the patient's body. It works for weight loss two ways. You are restricting how much a patient can take in, but also we're removing all of the appetite-producing hormone cells because those are found on the outside part of the stomach. Bypass is a little bit different. You get more restriction because we make the stomach smaller, but we also reroute the small intestine. So another part of weight loss that comes with that surgery is now you have a part of your small intestine that's no longer absorbing calories.
Ah, all right. Now, some people relapse. What happens now if you've reduced the volume that you can put in your stomach and you still eat like a swine?
Oh, man.
Seriously. Then are you stretching out the actual tissue of the stomach? Is there a rupture in someone's future if they continue to eat?
I wouldn't say anyone eats like a swine or anything.
This is what I say to my children.
Yeah.
I apologize.
No, that's okay. Yeah, it's not like that. It's mainly, first of all, there's no real, nothing is 100%, but rupture is not what you usually see with patients who are eating more than what they should be after a surgery. But that is another great part of our center is one of the things that we really pride ourselves on is we provide a lot of long-term post-operative care after surgeries, because we know from the data it's not just doing the surgery and then you go home and you're done. You get the surgery, but then we also want you to be seeing our dietitians, seeing myself, seeing our PAs and our behavioral health after the surgery, so we have you on track. And so then you're not even tempted to be kind of pushing the limits. You're on a good path. You're set up for success after the surgery.
I want to talk about the post-operative care, and I also want to talk about the emotional and psychological workups that need to be done before a big step like this happens. Let's, however, take a break right now. It's Dr. Ishna Sharma today on the Medical Monday program. Dr. Sharma is at St. Peter's Health Partners Bariatric and Metabolic Care. Give us a shout if you need a question answered, 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop. It's Medical Monday. Ray Graff with you. Our number is 800-348-2551, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Dr. Ishna Sharma is here, and she's on call for Pete's sake. So if you have a question, you better call now, because she's going to have to run out of here. And then the rep and I will just talk about things in general. Yeah, Courtney? All right. So quickly, before we get to the calls, the post-operative care has to be as important as the surgery, yeah?
Absolutely. And that's one of the important things about being at an accredited center. When you're looking for a bariatric surgeon, you want to make sure you go somewhere that's an accredited center, because that accreditation means that we have to have certain resources available pre-op and post-op for our patients, and that includes dietitians, behavioral health specialists, continued follow-up. And it's good because we know that that leads to better weight loss and better results over time anyways.
When you first see a patient, and maybe that patient is overweight, maybe morbidly obese, however you term it, I assume there are some physical barriers before surgery is even an option, as far as you have to lose X number of pounds. And I always wondered, is that a function? Is that requirement a function of seeing where the patient's emotional state is and how committed they are to actually succeeding? Or is this a physical thing? Hey, listen, we can't operate on you if you were that heavy.
It's all different. It depends on the patient and exactly what they're coming to the table with and what medical and surgical history they have. Our center and most accredited centers do require a small amount of weight loss to happen beforehand, before the surgery.
For any patient?
For any patient.
And it's okay. Is this a barrier? Is this a... you have to show us you want it?
It's not a you have to show us you want it, but it does speak to how well the patient is going to do in our program. Because the way this program works and the way it's set up for success is we have you seeing our nutritionist and behavioral health specialist and us, the surgery team, before surgery, because we know you're going to be seeing us after surgery as well. So if you're able to implement the kinds of recommendations we have that are individualized for you, usually that means a patient will come see our nutritionist. You know, we all all have barriers in our life that affect our health. Nobody's at optimal health at any time.
Tell me about it.
So when we come in, and we know that. So when you come in as a patient and you talk to a nutritionist, we want to hear about that. You know, and we have patients that say, hey, I work overnights. And so I know my eating schedule is out of whack, or, you know, I have four kids and I don't have time to cook for that.
Yeah.
So we give you, you know, individualized, personalized recommendations that we want to work for you. And if you follow those recommendations, 99% of the time, you are not going to have an issue meeting that initial weight loss.
Yeah.
And so then we know that the surgery is only going to help you. It's not going to be something that does nothing for you.
What about relapse, though? Is there a metric, a psychological metric that you used to sort of predict whether a person will not be the person who's looking for a quick fix and then continues to lead the gastric life that led them there?
It's so complex that, you know, and obesity is such a, and then this is another part of why I was so attracted to this field, is it's not like, it's not like other diseases, right, where it happens overnight or where there's one very specific thing that's led to it. Obesity is led to from so many factors. There's genetic issues, there's societal issues, there's an individual person's, what they're bringing to the table in terms of what their life looks like, what their personality is, what struggles they've had. So it's so hard to say, you know, this is going to be the path for each patient. And that's why we have such a kind of multidisciplinary way of doing it. That's why we have our behavioral health specialists, nutritionists, everybody involved. So each patient, you know, there is a rate of relapse, but the rate of relapse is definitely much higher at programs where they don't have all these resources.
Right.
If you go to a program where you have your surgery, you come in, you see somebody once, you have your surgery the next day, and then you're gone out there, you're probably not going to have good results.
We're joined today by Dr. Ishna Sharma, a board-certified general surgeon specializing in bariatric and minimally invasive surgery at St. Peter's Health Partners Bariatric and Metabolic Care. That's a lot of experts for one patient.
Mm-hmm.
Who is the manager of all of that? You?
Yeah, the surgeon is usually the kind of overseer. At our center, we're so fortunate. All of our specialists are very experienced and are very experienced specifically with obesity. We always say, you know, you don't just want a nutritionist. You want a nutritionist who works with bariatric patients. You want a behavioral health specialist who's worked with bariatric patients. And they're all so experienced. They've heard everything under the sun, and they really put the time and effort in to help you.
So you're never surprised?
We get surprised right now and then, but you know, we've seen it all, so we're all here to help the patient.
Dr. Ishna Sharma is our guest. Let's grab a call here, 800-348-2551, if you want to join the conversation, or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Let's start in Vermont, a lovely place. Valerie, you're on.
Hi there. I'm a nurse, and actually, by the way, I love St. Peter's. It has a wonderful, wonderful reputation. But my question is, I deal with a lot of patients that just want to lose 20 pounds. And I'm wondering if you have any ideas or thoughts or strategies for that question, that query.
Hey, Val. Thanks for your question. Yeah, you know, 20 pounds can mean different things to different people. As I'm sure you know, as a nurse, we usually look at BMI, and that gives a better sense of what 20 pounds is going to mean to that specific patient. Of course, diet and exercise are absolutely a good place to start. Finding nutritionists in the area who can help with that, and then finding places for physical exercise. That's also a barrier in our country these days. Do we feel safe walking outside? Do we have access to gyms? So those are kind of the things to tackle from the get-go. And then, of course, going to your primary care doctor. A lot of primary care doctors these days are also working in the obesity medicine realm, so they can get the patient in touch with resources like that. But, yeah, it's hard to say. 20 pounds is kind of on the gray area of how kind of intensive of a therapy is that patient going to need.
Valerie, you want to follow up?
That seems to be a common question that I get all the time. Not really people with major obesity problems. They just, the weight has gradually come on and they're not sure how to quickly get rid of it.
Right. And it's, in a way, it's, we have to encourage these patients because it's so good that they're trying to, they've noticed something, they've noticed a trend, and they're trying to rectify it before it starts getting out of hand. So, yeah, I would say starting with diet and exercise, things we can implement at home, small changes made over time definitely stick. And the studies show they stick and have longer term results than huge, drastic changes that we all want to try to make overnight.
Valerie, thanks for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. Dr. Ishna Sharma is our guest. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. Linda writes, someone I know lost half her body weight using a weight loss drug. Now insurance will no longer pay for the medication. What do you recommend for maintaining the weight loss? And this is a problem I hear a lot about.
Yeah. Yeah, this we're in a very kind of unique time with weight loss medications. They're so new, and I think we're still kind of learning which patients they're best for and which situations they're best for. I hear that a lot in my office, too, is this was working for me, and then either a side effect happened, and now I can't take it anymore, or this was working for me, and now my insurance won't cover it. And, ideally, while you're having it's the same like with surgery. When you're getting the medication, it's the therapy, and our goal is to not just be doing medication. We also at the same time want to be tackling our lifestyle and our diet and all that while we also are getting the benefits of the medication. But honestly, I get a lot of patients who have done all that, and just by virtue of stopping the weight loss medication, they could be trying their best and being on a perfect diet, and they will still gain all the weight
back. Well, this is what I hear. And
yeah,
of course,
yeah.
I'm not a doctor, so I don't know if it's true. But what you hear on the street is, oh, yeah, I took X and it worked fantastic.
Yep.
Stop taking it. It's all back now. That can't be healthy either.
It's hard to say. It's so new with all of this, and I think we're going to see a lot more data and see what happens with patients when we're kind of on this roller coaster and what those long-term results are.
You know, let's take a call here. I have other questions along these lines. Dr. Ishna Sharma is our guest. 800-348-2551. Dr. Sharma is with St. Peter's Health Partners Bariatric and Metabolic Care. Let's go to Wilton. Steve, you're on.
Yeah, hi. Dr. Sharma, thank you for taking my call. Dr. Sharma, I've been dealing with obesity for a great number of years, probably 50 at this point. My question is, I've tried a number of this fad diets and lost a great deal of weight, gradually gained it all back, but my question is, is there anything out there that will address metabolism issues? Now, my ethnic background is I've got Irish and Armenian. Both ethnicities were winnowed by starvation, and so survivors, I would expect, have a much more efficient metabolism. And I've been, as an athlete, I was a wrestler, so I did yo-yo dieting for, 6 years. So is there anything out there that could address this? I've taken, for example, Ozempic 2. It has absolutely zero effect on weight, but it has helped moderate my type 2 diabetes. So I'll pass that over to you if you could care to address this metabolism question I have.
Hi, Steve. Thanks for calling in. I'm sorry you've been suffering from obesity this long, and the story you're describing is very similar to what I hear from a lot of my patients in the office. You're absolutely right. The biggest, one of the biggest issues to tackle is the changes in metabolism. We know that yo-yo dieting does have good short-term results, but over time leads to a significant drop in our baseline metabolism, and it's hard to recover from that. So what you're describing is absolutely true. And one of the best ways we know to increase our metabolism, our resting metabolism, is building muscle mass. So that comes from increasing our protein intake. It comes from incorporating resistance training, weightlifting, all safely done. But those are really the only clear-cut ways of improving our metabolism. Ozempic and all that, it's hard to say how those affect our metabolism right now. I think we're going to see over time exactly how it's affecting our metabolism.
Steve.
All right. Okay.
Thank you for the call. Appreciate it very much. All right. A couple times now you've alluded to how new a lot of these drugs are, and I won't say any names because my legal department says don't say the names and get sued. But do you think they're rushed too quickly? In other words, there's a big economic demand for these things. There's money to be made. Have they been studied long enough?
I mean, I think they've been studied to the point where it's okay to put them out. I don't know of any extra rushing that's happened with these medications compared to any other medications.
Right.
So, of course, you know, the pharmaceutical company is in a business and an industry, and I'm sure they work their best to get things out as quickly as possible. But I don't know that it's unique to these medications. But I definitely know that in terms of how they fit into managing obesity, they definitely started as diabetes management medications. And so the now that they're also being used for obesity, it's created a real kind of unique situation where now patients with diabetes who really need them are not able to get them.
Yeah.
And then patients with obesity who like many of our patients calling in today found some success with it, are now not able to get it and are facing issues on that end. So, you know, rushed, I would say. I mean, who knows if they even anticipated this level of interest or this level of, you know.
Well, somebody
patience.
Probably did, and they got a big raise.
Yeah.
But the thing is, though, are in your estimation or in your prognostication, do you think there will be more side effects that we don't know about yet in some of these? And again, not naming names.
I mean, it's hard to say. I think all medications have side effects at the end of the day. And so the longer they're on market, the more we learn about it. With these medications, I just think it's interesting to see I think we're going to better be able to see which patients are best suited for this. And so I think in the interim, we're all just kind of struggling with kind of which patient is right for which medication.
Yeah.
How long should we try them before we go, okay, it's not working for them. We got to try something else. So
yeah.
That happens with every development in medicine. We have to give it some time and see where things end up laying out.
Dr. Ishna Sharma joins us from St. Peter's Health Partners today. It's bariatric and metabolic care. 800-348-2551 is the number. You can email voxpop@wamc.org. And we'll get back to the phones in just a moment. You mentioned BMI earlier. BMI is still a gold standard. I mean, here's why. You have an offensive tackle on a football field who's 340 pounds, but yet he can run, you know, a 100-yard dash in 11 seconds, and he's in shape. But his BMI is probably off the charts because he's got a ton of muscle and fat and everything else, too. But is BMI the gold standard still?
That's a great point. So BMI is still the gold standard in terms of how we think about who should and shouldn't get surgery, because I think from a broad perspective, it gives you enough information. But you're absolutely right that it's not a one size fits all. And you have to look at other things with the patient coming in as well. And we look at that in our office. You know, we don't just go off of BMI, but that's definitely a big part of what we use. We also go off of what other health issues are they having? Are they starting to have other health conditions that we know are coming from obesity, like high blood pressure, diabetes, obstructive sleep apnea, things like that. So yeah, it's not definitely not BMI is not perfect, and I think that's also an area of study where we're still trying to figure out what the best way to measure health from that perspective is.
Dr. Ishna Sharma is our guest today. 800-348-2551 is the number. Let's go to Matamoros, Pennsylvania. Jim, you're on.
What type of dietary restrictions are prescribed for the bariatric surgery?
Dietary restrictions.
Hey, Jim. Thanks for your call. So dietary restrictions, it depends on what you're kind of coming in with, your medical history, and what kind of things we need to work on. Big picture, we promote high protein, low carbohydrate diets. We find that is especially really good for when you want to build muscle and get your metabolism up over time. Of course, we want to get your nutrients and things like that. Other than that, for any bariatric surgery at our center, we do have some very strict restrictions immediately after the surgery, and that's just because when you're recovering. But over time, all patients kind of end up going back to a quote-unquote normal diet. It's just smaller amounts over time. So in the 1 month after bariatric surgery, there are some pretty strict restrictions. You're pretty much only on clear liquids, then softer foods. For a month.
Wow.
but it's because people get full so quickly.
Yeah.
It's we want to make sure we have to actually put them on a very scheduled diet so you're staying hydrated and getting enough nutrition.
Yeah.
But then once you're after that month out, it's going to be small amounts but frequent meals all day.
Jim, thanks for the call. Seems to me you could probably lose quite a bit of weight if you just went on clear liquids for a month without the surgery, yeah?
Yeah, but that's like short-term gains. We like to focus more on how a patient's going to be looking 5 years after the surgery and things like that. So you do have some weight fluctuations in that month, but that's not the main goal.
And on average, what do the patients look like 5 years after surgery?
They, the studies show you have about at least 50 to high end 70% weight loss of your excess weight loss. That's not our center's data. That's just nationwide bariatrics data. Our goal is to have you at least keep that off for the first 5 years. And then because once you're past that, it's more of a hopefully in that five years, you've been on our post-op diet. You've been on our post-op follow-ups. And so now we see most of our patients are kind of just doing their thing 5 years out and in a good state.
Dr. Ishna Sharma is our guest. We'll take a break here. 800-348-2551 is the number. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. We'll be back. Medical Monday, Ray Graff here. It's Bariatric and Metabolic Care with Dr. Ishna Sharma from St. Peter's Health Partners. The number is 800-348-2551. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. Get back to the phones in just one moment. I believe this, what I'm about to ask about is cosmetic surgery, but there are a lot of TV ads about this now where basically, you know, they're taking a vacuum and sucking out all the fat from your stomach. What is that, and how is that efficacious in any way?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you said it. That's cosmetic surgery.
Yeah,
those kinds of surgeries fall under plastic surgery. So the liposuctions, the tummy tucks, things like that. I am not a specialist in those at all. But yeah, they help patients for if they have different kinds of goals in mind.
But okay, there's one thing to say. I want to look better, but does it help? You're losing weight theoretically.
You are losing weight theoretically, but the vast benefit of bariatric surgery, and we say this in our office a lot, bariatric surgery is not cosmetic surgery.
Right.
Bariatric surgery is health surgery. We don't know what you're going to look like after bariatric surgery. And it's so funny. So, some of my patients come in and they are so excited to lose weight and they want to feel better, but they're also worried. Is my face going to look different? And it's like, yeah, you might look different, but you are definitely going to be healthier, you know? So cosmetic surgery is different because people come in with very different goals about what they want to look like and that. And so that's a different
specialty. So you look askance at such things.
No, I mean, I think it's helpful. And I have friends and family who've gotten, surgery like that, and they're very happy.
Okay.
So.
All right, fair
but
enough.
It's just different goals than bariatric surgery.
I do try to get my guests into trouble, and you're avoiding it very well.
Oh, boy.
Dr. Ishna Sharma is our guest today from St. Peter's Health Partners. The number is 800-348-2551. Barbara's in Great Barrington. Hello, Barbara.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
And thank you for having this show. My daughter had gastric bypass surgery several years ago, and she did lose quite a bit of weight. We were all very happy about it. But little by little, it's come back. And I'm sorry if you've already answered this question, but why does it come back?
It's worth asking again, Barbara.
Why can't she have kept it off?
Yep.
Yeah, Barbara, thank you for the question. And for your family member, it's hard to say without knowing exactly what her medical history was, what kind of surgery exactly she had and things like that. But we do see sometimes patients do have weight regain, and we have patients referred to us not having had surgery done here. We get patients who had surgery elsewhere and that come to us with this exact issue. And so there's a lot of different reasons. We start with kind of talking through, has anything changed in the last couple of years at home? Has anything changed in the patient's lifestyle? Then we do some, imaging studies and some nutritional lab workup and just trying to get to the root of things. The good news is for patients in that situation, there are a lot of things that can be done. So it's not an end of the road. There's nothing else we can do. So if your family member is in this situation, I would recommend that they reach out to an accredited bariatric center, because oftentimes we can find things that we can help with. And sometimes it's as, quote unquote, simple as getting back with a nutritionist, back with a behavioral health specialist and getting us back on track with our habits. But sometimes it really is that the patient's doing everything they can on their end and they need more help from a sometimes medical, surgical, endoscopic perspective.
Barbara.
Yes. Yes, thank you so much.
Okay.
Yep.
Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 800-348-2551. If you have a question for Dr. Ishna Sharma, 800-348-2551. Let's go to Albany, and Aaron, you're on.
Hi, Hi. I have a 7-year-old daughter who has anxiety about her weight and her appearance already, which was shocking to me because she's my only child so far. She's a healthy, strong, muscular kid, dances, gymnastics, eats lots of fruits and veggies. A book was recommended to me by a friend who saw it recommended by a podologist, and it's called Everybody. And somebody, you actually queued up my question about BMI, and it's about having a safe conversation with children about their body weight, their image. And when you mentioned BMI, it brought me back to this book that made a point of saying that BMI was not the right tool to use, that it was created by white men and it's inaccurate. And I'm curious what you think about that, not only for me as an adult, but for children. And as a doctor, I'm curious if you have other tools for parents to use. It's a very fraught time. She is completely healthy, but already has anxiety about it. And I would love to figure out a way to alleviate that.
Great question.
Yeah, thank you for that question. I'm so sorry your daughter's going through this, especially at 7. Obesity is such a complex issue. It's not just health sometimes. A lot of it is social pressure and things like that. And especially as a child, we have a lot of different factors that affect how we're feeling. When I was training and doing fellowship at Mayo Clinic, we had a whole department of pediatric obesity medicine specialists. And just specifically because children are so different in so many ways from adults, that a lot of what we say and a lot of what I've been saying today applies only to adults and has nothing to do with what children are going through. BMI is definitely not the right tool for everybody. I completely agree that it's, as a lot of things in medicine, was not really inclusive when it was first created. And that's fine. And we're working to find better tools now. But at the same time, patients do today have obesity. And so we also have to have a tool that we can use kind of current day. So BMI fills a gap that we need right now. But I completely agree that it's not the end all be all of if someone's healthy or not. Children, especially, for a child, the best thing to do is to go to your pediatrician, and hopefully they have some sort of pediatric obesity medicine center they can refer to. Otherwise, pediatricians these days often, sadly, obesity is becoming an issue in younger and younger populations in the U.S. So most pediatricians also have some experience with their own patients as well. But when you are talking about a child, you're looking at growth curves, you're looking at their nutrition in terms of their blood level markers, all kinds of things outside of what they're looking and feeling like that actually tell us much more about their health. So I'm not familiar with that book. I'll have to check it out. But I would definitely say start with your pediatrician, so at least you know you're getting a good source of medical information, and then go from there with how we can help your child.
Erin.
Yeah, thank you. It's shocking to me. Again, I'm old. I'm 48. I have a 7-year-old. I remember having feelings in my teenage years, but I don't recall being so anxious at 7,
right,
and actually not having an issue. She is not obese. She's a very healthy, strong kid. So
yeah,
it's right, really hard for me to try and find the tools to help her through it.
You know, Erin, I got a bunch of kids too, and I've seen this too. My youngest is a little older than 7, but if you can, and I'm not telling you what to do, but what I tried to do, at least with the first couple, was keep them away from social media. There are so many bad influences as far as body image and everything else out there. Take it for what it's worth. That's my advice on that.
Oh, no. We have a zero social media policy in our house. She never even saw a screen until she was older than 2.
So. I love it. Erin, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. Dr. Ishna Sharma is our guest from St. Peter's Health Partners Bariatric and Metabolic Care. Well, only about 10 minutes to go, and you haven't had a call yet on the, being on call. You didn't have to
so
race
far
out of
yeah,
here.
Yeah, yeah, so far.
All right, well, let's knock wood, and let's go back to the phones.
Right.
Joanna in South Hadley, you're on.
Hi, thanks so much for this wonderful program. Every time I go into the supermarket, I'm just shocked at how many people's food carts are filled to overflowing with sodas and potato chips and baked goods and everything else. Now, I'm very fortunate. I've never had a weight problem, but I just think to myself, with such a high level of obesity, what are your thoughts about how how people could become educated about food, about what to eat less of.
Yeah, Joe, thanks for your question. I mean, obesity is such a complex disease. You know, it is such a uniquely complex disease because some patients don't have an issue with it until they become an adult and then something happens. Some patients have had it their whole life since they were a child. And it's so, you have to meet patients where they are. And you're absolutely right that we as a country don't do a good job about education from childhood onwards about this. And it's so hard because, you know, if we are someone that we also learn a lot from others around us as children, right? So then this becomes a very kind of societal systemic issue. If we are living, in a community and in a family where everybody's eating certain things and we're all, you know, then that's what we're going to grow up with and learn and seek as comfort food as we're growing up. If we are fortunate enough to have grown up in a house and in a community where everyone's eating healthy things, then that's how we're going to grow up. And so that's definitely one part of how can we maximize education and access to good foods for everybody in the country. And then we can kind of start from the ground up on preventing this.
Joanna.
Thank you very much. I can tell that you know that an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure.
Absolutely.
And if you have any thoughts and your colleagues have thoughts about this, I hope they'll be sending them up to the National Institutes of Health and giving them some ideas. We just need more. We need more education. Thanks.
Yep, absolutely.
Joanna, thanks for the call. 800-348-2551 is the number if you have a question for Dr. Ishna Sharma from St. Peter's Health Partners, Bariatric and Metabolic Care. So what Joanna said, accurate though it is, and clearly she's followed me in the grocery aisle before, but the thing is, when you are counseling patients, and we talked about this at the beginning of the show as well, there's an emotional and psychological component, and a lot of these diseases or a lot of these afflictions that you deal with, there's a tremendous societal and psychological pressure on people who are afflicted with these, and you feel guilt and you feel everything else. Now, as a fatty from way back, I, the last thing I want is someone wagging a finger at me and say, look at what you shopped for. So how do you deal with that component when you're dealing with your patients?
That is such an excellent question. It's something we struggle with in the sense that by the time a patient comes to a bariatric surgery office or a weight loss center like we have, they have already kind of made a decision on their end. They've understood that, hey, I have a problem. I need help with it. I'm not making improvement on my own. So that patient is actually very looking forward to learning. And so those patients are very easy to work with in the sense that they are desperate for help and for information, and they are desperate to try something new that they haven't been trying, because most of my patients have for decades been suffering from obesity, and it's just getting more and more out of control, and that's when they come to our office. It's the patients who have obesity that are coming to their primary care doctor who have not thought for a second about their obesity, and yet, you know, the primary care doctor's there prescribing them more high blood pressure medications, more diabetes medications, and the primary care doctor can see exactly what the issue is. That's the patient, I mean, I feel for, and I talk to our primary care doctors all the time about this, is they are in such a situation where they want the best for their patient, and they know that if that patient doesn't get their obesity under control, they are looking at more and more healthcare issues down the line. But then how does that primary care doctor have this very sensitive discussion with that patient? And as we know, primary care doctors are also struggling with the limited amount of time and resources they have to get everything they need to get done. So they are in a uniquely kind of difficult position. But a lot of our primary care doctors have a lot of success with patients in our system anyways, where they're able to gently and in an emotionally intelligent way talk to the patient and explain, hey, these are my concerns. If you'd like, do you want to just go to their center and find out more about what they can do to help? And then those patients we cut in that way.
But so really, by the time someone steps in the door at St. Peter's Health Partners Bariatric and Metabolic Care, they've already made a psychological leap.
Yeah, and it takes a lot. I mean, patients with obesity they have so many kind of barriers to seek healthcare, and studies show this, is they are some of the last to seek healthcare because they suffer real biases, you know? They've suffered real biases when they go out and ask for help, and so it takes a lot for them to overcome that and come into our center, and we know that, and that's why we're so kind of do our best to be helpful and emotionally intelligent about everything we're doing.
the number to call here, and we only have a couple of minutes left, but if you want to race in and get a call, feel free. 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. Dr. Ishna Sharma is our guest today. And how many, I'm not asking to violate HIPAA or anything.
Okay.
How many patients a year do you treat? How big of a problem is this?
Patients a year? I genuinely don't know our exact number. How big of a problem is this different than how many patients we see,
I suppose,
right?
You're right. Yeah, that was an unfair addendum.
Because we see, the studies show, sadly, less than 5% of patients with morbid obesity even ever seek care for it.
And why do you think that is?
For
some people just
reasons,
say, I'm down with it. I'm fine. I am who I am.
Maybe there's some of that, but I think some patients don't want to talk about it. It's a very personal, sensitive issue, and they don't want to go talk to a bunch. They don't want to bare their heart and talk to a bunch of people about this, let alone over and over again every time they come to the hospital. So I think there's a lot of barriers. A lot of patients don't know that there are a lot of tools these days to be able to help them. So, yeah.
Okay, we have an email here, and I don't know if you can answer this one, actually. Why do food stamps pay for soda? That's from KF.
Why do food stamps pay for soda? I don't know how the food stamp system was made.
That's not your department.
Yeah, yeah.
So what didn't we cover that you want to hit home? We only have about 2 minutes left here.
I would say, if you're someone who's been listening to this program and you either are anything that we've talked about today, makes you think about yourself or think about a loved one who could benefit from getting help for their obesity, then please don't hesitate to reach out. We meet every patient wherever they're at, mentally and physically, and usually we can offer at least something to help patients. And also, don't feel alone. Obesity is something, at this point, vast majority of Americans have struggled with at some level or another. So there's nothing to be ashamed of or embarrassed about. This is a disease, and if you are seeking help for something you're struggling with, that's actually really brave.
Are you the last person a patient would see? In other words, is there counseling and everything else before the patient gets to you?
No, it depends. It's all kind of, we do our informational seminar for all our new patients. And then patients actually, again, because most of them, by the time they're reaching out to our center, kind of know, how much of an issue this is for them.
Yeah.
They'll either see me or my partner, and then we'll decide if surgery is or isn't an option for them together. If it's not an option, then there's a different path. If it is an option, then there's a different path, and so on.
And in most cases, the primary care physician is really the first line of defense here, yeah?
Yeah. I mean, if you haven't seen your PCP lately, then you can always kind of look up St. Peter's Bariatric and Metabolic Care online and give us a call, and we can help you through the process that way. But that's how most of our patients come to us, is from referrals from their PCPs.
You know what, Dr. Ishna Sharma, we're done. You did a fantastic, fantastic job.
I had a really nice time talking to you.
Yeah.
And great questions from everybody.
Now zoom on back to surgery.
That's right. There's always something to do.
Support comes from Cafe Capriccio, Albany, New York. The Rua family serving Albany since 1982. Now booking private events in Jim Rua's private chef's table. CafeCapriccio.com for information. Once again, thanks to Dr. Ishna Sharma of St. Peter's Health Partners Bariatric and Metabolic Care for joining us today. And thank you for the calls, good ones at that. Thanks for the emails. Thanks to Zachary Malloy, our engineer. Thanks to Giordo the Great for answering the phones today. That's his magician stage name, Giordo the Great. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow we will shift gears. It's Birding with Rich Guthrie and Julie Hart. Boyds, tomorrow at 2. We'll see you for that.